For example, as I indicated earlier, a very sharp reduction in the proportion of people who would object to voting for a Catholic, a black, or a Jew, or some other minority group for president and other high political offices. Are we putting our religious beliefs into practice? Surveys confirm what observation tells us clearly. People call themselves religious, but act otherwise. Reinhold Niebuhr said, "People tend to think of themselves in terms of the ideals they entertain." America may be one of the most religious nations on earth, and certain indications we have that they are. But at the same time, the question must be asked, are we living our faith? Few will disagree that true religious faith is faith put into action on behalf of others. Are we practicing what Albert Schweitzer called the second vocation, looking for ways to help others while carrying on our regular jobs? Are some people, however, predestined to have strong religious faiths and others not? Perhaps it would seem this way, but here's what Mother Teresa of Calcutta said, as quoted in Malcolm Muggeridge's book, Something Beautiful for God. "Love is a fruit in season at all times and within the reach of every hand. Anyone may gather it, and no limit is set." But how do we reach this love? Mother Teresa says, "Everyone can reach this love through meditation, spirit of prayer, sacrifice, and an intense inner life." Certainly one of the questions, one of the major ways, if not the major way, which we can contribute to society is in the raising of our families. Now, you're not confronted with this, most of you, but you will be shortly. Certainly sociologists, psychiatrists, clergymen, indeed the vast majority of parents in this country are in solid agreement that the root cause of many of society's ills is the breakdown of the family unit. The results of child neglect are all too evident, of course. And our surveys show that a majority of parents say drug use and alcohol use are serious problems in the schools of their communities. For 6 of the last 7 years, parents have named discipline as the top problem in their local schools. Prior to this time, the problems named were always those related to the curriculum. Now all the top problems are related to discipline. There is a great deal that we can do. Certainly there's a great deal that is discouraging about America. But there is a great deal that we as individuals can and must do to turn things around in this country and to reinvigorate society as we move into the 3rd century of our history. Robert Maynard Hutchins, the educator, has said, "The death of democracy is not likely to be an assassination by ambush. It will be a slow extinction from apathy, indifference, and undernourishment." Edmund Burke said, "The only thing for the triumph of evil is for good men to do nothing." Thank you very much. Thank you. Now, if you have any questions, I will try to answer them. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. Indeed, it is. It's a very definite. Oh, I'm sorry. This young lady asked about the contradiction between a high crime rate and a high rate of religion. I think, to a certain extent, even people involved in crime are highly religious, which would seem an anachronism, and seem a paradox, rather. I think the two really do operate. I mean, clearly they do operate at the same time. Now, one might argue that the crime situation would be even worse if it were not for religious beliefs acting as a restraint. For example, in this study in Dayton, we asked young people, and Dayton, let me remind you, was picked because it's a barometer area for the country, so we can project the results from Dayton to the whole country. 40% of people and young people in Dayton, 18 to 29 years old, said that their beliefs about God and religion had an effect on their actions in a 24-hour period. And their answers were, they explained in which ways. We can see that their religious beliefs were acting as an inspiration and made them do things they might not otherwise do. but also as a restraint. We noticed that people, a few people said that they'd refrain from robbing a store, for example, or throwing a stone through a store window, and so forth. So one could argue that the situation would be still worse if it were not for religion acting as a brake, if you will. Yes. Yes, now this the question is, in an interview with my dad, right? This was probably several months ago, though, right? In February, right. Well, there was some upturn in optimism, but I think we've recovered from those grim feelings at that point, actually, even though there had been some slight upturn in optimism at that point because of the recovery in the economy. But I think it is certain that Americans are more depressed about the economy than they have been for many years, indeed. They are very discouraged about the economy, but the economic recovery has made people feel much better, of course, without question. But the economy continues to be the number one concern of the American people. As I indicated, it would be in a period when we're not at war. It has a way of always being the dominant issue if we're not at war. The question is there a trend toward socialism in this country? In 10 years, this young man heard somebody say, in 10 years that we will have a socialistic country, is that right? That socialism will be the main political force. Judging by the attitudes about free enterprise system, we could be headed that way indeed. The business community, of course, is making heroic efforts to change this around by starting programs of education among young people today. We have not focused directly on that issue, but do intend to immediately after the election. Probably we should before the election, but we will right after the election. And so I can't really offer you any figures on that. But we will be definitely focusing on that after the election. Yes. Mm-hmm. Well, we have 140 sponsoring newspapers around the country. They have supported the Gallup poll right from the beginning. We don't do any political research, private political research for candidates or parties, I should point out. We have another organization called the Gallup Organization Incorporated, which does the full range of market research for corporations, foundations, so forth. Watch the Mets game. That's a good point. Now, I think that after last year's the 1960, the first debate in that year, there was quite a fall off, as you know. Whether people will tune out before the program's even over is a moot point. I couldn't even venture an opinion about it, but I think because the interest is riding so high that a lot of people will hang in there. That would be my guess. A lot of people are waiting to see just what kind of animal Mr. Carter is. I mean, I don't mean that negatively. I mean, just to see what... they have a lot of questions about him, really. I mean, even though he was in the picture very much in the spring campaign, they want to see exactly where he stands on issues and how he does in this kind of format. So a lot of people may be tuning, remain hanging in there, possibly. On the other hand, it may be a total bust, of course. So, how's that for a clear-cut answer? Yes. Mm-hmm. I won't be able to deal with figures, unfortunately, but my impressions are based on the way the public reacts, that the public as a whole is not terribly shaken up by this, but that the more educated segments are, that college students are. And I think this is certainly contributes to a negative image of business on campus today, are these deals, without question. I mean, among young people who have, college students who have followed more carefully. But I would venture to say that among the populace as a whole, that these are not well known necessarily, or followed, or very negative factors in terms of their views toward business. I think for the nation as a whole, they may be basing their views on business more on products, whether they're shoddy or not, something more direct of that nature. Yes? Mm-hmm. I'm sure you would find a correlation. I'm sure you would. But actually, this trend toward voluntarism has been going on for a few years. And I think it's spurred in part by religious motivations, too. In fact, most volunteer work is done for churches. There has been very little drop-off in religious interest and participation among Protestants over the last two decades, despite what some observers have felt. Actually, of course, there's been a very sharp drop-off among Catholics. But I would suspect that we have no data on that, but I would think you're absolutely right. At least I know of several people in that situation. Yes? Mm-hmm. You mean in terms of competence? I think they're, by and large, they're competent, the private polling groups. There are a few who aren't, and hopefully identified by the reader. The reader polls, but by and large, they use sophisticated methods with a couple of notable exceptions, and provide very valuable data for the candidates, to be sure. Now, the candidates themselves, House members and members of the Senate, many of them still use very unsophisticated ways of collecting data and reading public opinion, such as the mail survey, which of course can be terribly misleading. You hear only from those who have an axe to grind and the more educated. And it's a very biased sample, obviously. But they are becoming more sophisticated and are using better methods to measure public opinion. Of course, in many instances, these polls that they send out are strictly a PR gesture. We determine or select our barometer areas on the basis of past vote. The political divisions usually represent very closely economic divisions and other key divisions. So it's basically a political barometer, though. But if we look at the background characteristics, after looking at the political vote, they do tend to line up, the background characteristics, that is, other than politics, with the national figures. For example, we are now about to launch a survey in Gloucester County, a very intensive survey. And we picked Gloucester because in elections going all the way back to 1940, the vote there has been within one percentage point, or slightly over, in every single election. So they, and if you look at the demographics, they match up closely with the nation's, as a matter of fact. But the barometer, we don't use barometer areas as a rule. The advantage of a barometer area is that it's more acceptable to poll critics. They can better understand, are going saturating four barometer areas in four sections of the country more easily, that is reaching everybody, more easily than they can accept 1,500 people distributed all over the country. So it's a good approach from that point of view. And it's also, you can relate the environment and the community to their views much more easily, too, with using a barometer community. Well, actually, we don't select individuals. We could. As a matter of fact, in the future, telephone surveys are really going to be extremely important as more and more people get a phone, and and pollsters can overcome the reluctance to talk over telephones, which is a problem particularly in politics, political research. But actually, we do not select individuals. What we do is divide the country into seven groups of cities or community sizes, seven levels or strata. And then we, let's say we have a list of 100 cities, a million and more. And let's say we take the first and the 10th and the 20th and so forth, a random selection procedure. But then that city is listed, all the subdivisions in terms of blocks are listed. Then we take the first and the 10th and the 20th and so forth. In other words, again, letting a random selection process operate. So it's a pure random selection process of blocks. Down to the block level, it's a pure probability sample, totally done by probabilities, chance, odds, what have you. At that point, the interviewer goes in, skips the corner house, because this is usually the home of somebody of slightly greater affluence than the average, and goes to every fourth household. In other words, it's still out of his or her hands, which person is interviewed in terms of household. But at that point, when they go to the household, they ask for the youngest man, 18 and older, because it's hardest to get a young man at home. And then there's a definite pattern after that. She has a quota to fill in terms of proportions in the various age groups and the proportion of men and women. Did you hear the question? Will the cutaway, the candidates don't want the cutaway to the audience, and the networks do, and will the fact that there won't be cutaways, will that make people turn off, actually? I would just be guessing. I have no data to by which to answer you. I would just be speculating, I'm afraid. Perhaps somebody else in the room has some strong feelings about that. Yes, there are two questions. One is, will the fact that there'll be no cutaways to the audience, will this hurt people watching? Will it reduce the number of people watching? And the networks wanted these cutaways to the audience, and the candidates didn't. The question is, what effect will this have on the audience, TV audience? My answer was, I don't know. Perhaps somebody else does. I really would just be guessing, I'm afraid. That's a good question. Yes. Mm-hmm. Oddly enough, polls have a very limited effect on undecided candidates and in terms of getting voters to jump on the winner's side or helping the underdog. Because we have good evidence that this is not the case, because going all the way back to 1936, if you look at the trend line, you'll see that the lead candidate does not pick up strength when you show him leading. And similarly, there is little effect in terms of the underdog, too, or the undecided, or you would see the lead candidate picking up strength in certain instances. But even in the landslide situation, where you think people would be more inclined to jump on the winner's side, you see no such tendency. I think it's not that people don't, are not thinking about what other people, how they feel about it when they make up their minds. Of course they are. But there are really close at home economic issues which seem to push aside those other considerations. Not that they're not there. Sure, the person who said nostalgia is a nasal condition, that I believe was a man said that. So now we're up to 2-1, and I could give you loads of examples. Sure can. Yes. Yes, this is, indeed, the revolution is the right word, because the attitudes towards premarital sex, for example, have changed very, very dramatically over the last, since the mid-60s. And the big change has come about in denominational schools, Catholic denominational schools. But all throughout society, actually, but particularly among young people, there's been very, very dramatic changes. And in fact, you see a very sharp generation gap here, too. A majority of people 30 and over think it's wrong for people to have premarital sex relations, but a majority of persons under 30 feel that it's not wrong. There's been a revolution in terms of attitudes towards nudity, too, on the stage and so forth. That's a big change in that area, too. By the same token, I don't think that we have no evidence that there's a more permissive attitude in terms of the distribution of pornography and so forth, and pornography in magazines and so forth. The public is very, very down on that, including young people. Yes. Mm-hmm. The latter question is hard to determine, really, because you have to get a sense of the priorities or the intensity of feelings about this particular issue. But we do know that the majority of the public feel that President Ford was wrong to pardon President Nixon, and by about the same proportion as we found right after he did pardon President Nixon, which rather surprised me. I thought that opposition would have subsided somewhat after 2 years, but it didn't. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I better wait till this young lady leaves. The one indication that, frankly, the levels of recognition of public figures and events and so forth is lower among women than men in this country. No opinion is usually about twice as high among women as among men in this country on issues and so forth, except on certain issues, which are very close at home, issues such as those relating to education. Are very women and men, I mean, very low, no opinion, and issues like that, what we call close to home kinds of issues, actually. But there is a difference in informational level. I'm so sorry. Yes. In politics, there is a difference, very definitely, between men and women, and their knowledge of the candidates and the issues and so forth. On economic issues, those close to home, women are certainly as well informed as men on these, what it takes to get along with the family of four, and their feelings on their ideas on whether the economy is moving ahead or not, they are just as willing to express opinions on that, of course, because they do the marketing. So they are as well informed. It depends on the particular issue, actually. This young man asked, do we see any difference in the composition and size of the two parties within the next 8 years, did you say? 4 or 8 years. It's very difficult to say, but the GOP is, of course, in a very rough shape. Not only have 1 in 5, say they're Republicans, and they're outnumbered, Republicans are outnumbered 2 to 1 by the Democrats, but among young people, most of whom are independents, if you ask them which way they lean 5 to 1 Democratic. So it doesn't look too good for the future for the GOP. The GOP might do well to change its name to the Republican-Conservative Party, because a lot of people like the label conservative. That doesn't mean that they are more conservative It's just that they like the label conservative more than liberal. So, as a matter of fact, if you had two parties, you called one conservative and one liberal, you'd have them about equal. This has been historically the situation, oddly enough. But it's very confusing to say that because they like the label conservative, that therefore they're more conservative or more liberal, because those terms oughtn't to be used to measure left-right sentiment. But if the GOP does change its name, and there's considerable support for that, we find in a poll, or to Republican-Independent Party, they may start to score to a certain extent. If President Ford wins, this will help somewhat in terms of party affiliation, though party affiliation doesn't really change much, even though one of their leaders wins big. Even when Eisenhower won, it did not really change basic party lines much. But it will change a little. It could change it a little. So a name change, a Republicans winning, Watergate disappearing more in the background, those kinds of things could help the GOP make a recovery. We don't poll on the Senate, actually, because we don't have enough cases nationwide to poll on the Senate, but we do with Congress because there's so many more congressional districts, actually. So we typically poll just on Congress. I would suspect that the more educated people, people with college background, would be more concerned about this, but that's just an impression. I think the general public feels the effects of their efforts, but may not know exactly what these efforts are, I mean, on a national basis. Yes. The newspapers underwrite the Gallup poll. They subscribe on a yearly basis to two surveys or reports per week for release Thursday and Sunday night. And this has been the basis of the support for the poll since the beginning. Occasionally we do a television special, but not very often. I've enjoyed being here very, very much. Thank you.